This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars, News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week. You're on News Talk Radio WOKV. Brian Sexton, along with Jeff Lagerman, Vic Ketchman's here. Joe Fortunato has the headset on. The microphone is waiting for his baseball predictions at some point this evening. Before you do that, just a little bit, could you turn my headset up? A little housekeeping here. Okay, ready to go. Good evening, fellas.
I'm ready.
I know you are. You're fired up. You know, you've had a week, by the way, of really angry emailers.
Oh, I am hated.
And I hated?
I didn't play one down, and I'm hated.
What what could lovable Vic do that would make people hate
him? Well, I think they're angry at the Jaguars.
and you're the pincushion?
Yeah, the messenger.
Well, when you give up 305 on the ground, that kind of stirs the emotional pot, I guess you could say.
It was a very, very disappointing game. Fans are very disappointed. I understand that. I think we do have to remind ourselves of what the realistic expectations should have been for this team going into the season. But I know it's always tough on the day of the game when it's going down, as it's happening, to say, oh, gee, they weren't going to be very good. But now this is Wednesday. We should be down, we should be up out of the valley. You know, we should be on a more level plane. I did something on my radio show Monday night spontaneously. It just hit me as I was doing it. It was not rehearsed, and I did not think of it until I was on the air and I started looking over some things, and a caller said something that triggered this. And after I did some research during a break, and I think you're going to find this very telling, if not alarming. Gentlemen, there were in the Jaguars starting lineup, offense, defense combined Sunday, six players that I call unwanteds. Meaning nobody wanted him.
Guys that were added to the roster.
Well, Brian Russell was cut. Gerald Alexander, who was traded, but they had drafted Lewis Delmas to replace him, so he was out. Trey Thomas had no offers from anybody other than here. Torrey Holt, same thing. You know, I love Torrey, but he said it best when we interviewed him the day they signed him. Tennessee never made an offer to him. He had no offer other than here. There were Ernest Wilford, who was cut by Miami, and there's one other guy who was in the starting lineup.
A.T. Ellison.
With four teams before he came here. That's six in the starting lineup. So then I started to count the whole roster. 17, including Jeremy Cain, who was the long snapper, cut by the Redskins. The Greg Petersons. Is it Peterson or Patterson?
Peterson.
The Courtney Greens, the Keenan Forneys, 17 players on the Jaguars' 53-man roster are what I would call unwanteds, street guys, or on their way to being street guys. So I think you have to keep that in mind. That's not justification for 30-13. That's not justification for 305 yards rushing, having allowed 305 yards rushing, because that's a blowout score, and that's a horrible number to have yielded. That's not professional football as we've known it here in Jacksonville. But we must bear in mind that there are 17 players on the Jaguars 53 who are unwanted, and the Jaguars are 3-4, and they should be 4-4 after this Sunday's game. They should be 4-4 at the halfway point.
You were pretty adamant about how the Jaguars should win in the pregame show in Nashville.
That had to be the expectation.
Yeah.
Had to be. Because.
And you were saying that you would be very down if they lost to the Tennessee Titans. I remember it very distinctly because my response to you was, hey, look, I think this is a better team than what the Jaguars faced in Jacksonville. You were pretty strong about that comment.
I would be very happy to go back and listen to it again, but I can tell you this. My stance going into the game was that if we were going to talk about the Jaguars as a playoff contender, then it was pretty much on the basis of the team having a somewhat soft schedule the rest of the way, and we had identified those soft spots as the Tennessee game, the Kansas City game, the Buffalo game, Cleveland. And they had to win. They had to score wins on the soft spots to be a playoff contender. Therefore, if you don't beat Tennessee, which is one of the soft spots, right, then you're not a playoff contender.
Well, the way I saw it with the loss on Sunday was that this team is, even though they're different, right where that team last year was, unable to take advantage of the soft spot.
Well, and see my whole thing is that I don't want to see this, and I'm signaling ups and downs.
Right.
You know, you play Indianapolis tight, you come back at home, and then you get thumped by the Cardinals. And then you have a good performance against Houston on the road, play Tennessee at home, play well, go to Seattle, you get thumped. And then St. Louis, hey, look, a lot of people are saying, hey, look, it took overtime to beat a terrible Rams team. Hey, look, it's the NFL. I'm okay with taking overtime to beat a team that is not very good. But then in Tennessee, you know, it was another down point. You know, so the ups and downs is, see, I'm okay with a team losing because it's the National Football League.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, other teams get paid. They've got good players. But I don't like to see it to where in the fourth quarter the game's not in the mix still.
I agree. And the thing that really bummed me out, if there was one thing that bummed me out on Sunday, this was it. They rallied from a 13, was it 13-0 deficit?
Yes.
They rallied from a 13-0 deficit to take a 14-13 lead.
No, they didn't, remember. No.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that kick is supposed to be good. You're supposed to be able to kick an extra point in the National Football League.
Right.
They should have had a 14-13 lead, which means they overcame the deficit, and they should have been back in the lead, turning the game over to their defense. Okay, make a stop, give us the ball back, and then watch us run it. They were right where they should have been, and the defense just folded like a diaper.
Got to be fixed. I mean, that,
betcha.
You know, and the thing that really I think was bothersome to me was that if you take a sample of 10 plays in the game here in Jacksonville, and then you take a sample of, you know, eight plays of the game, you know, six or seven, same number of plays in Nashville, in Jacksonville, and I think the tempo was very different on defense, you know, and I think John Henderson really set the tempo here because remember the game here in Jacksonville, John switched from right end to left end and matched up against Big Country and was, I mean, just out of his shell. I mean, just freaking out. And then you go to Nashville, and I was looking for that same kind of attitude because that's what that game is. It's an attitude game. Stopping the run is an attitude game with a team that had a quarterback who had five attempts leading up to that game. And I wanted to see more attitude out of that defense because stopping the run is not about talent. I really believe that stopping the run is about desire and is about commitment. And that was disappointing to me in that game.
If there was one thing about this team that I would like to change, if I could turn the clock back, I would turn it all the way back to last year's scouting combine in Indianapolis because I can remember being there and doing these interviews, these videos, and the hot topic was, since Jack Del Rio had just hired Mel Tucker, the hot topic was this move to the 3-4. And I can remember thinking then, this team doesn't have 3-4 players. If there is one thing that I could turn the clock back and change, that would be it. Forget that 3-4 crap and go find whatever you need in the way of defensive ends off the street, junk, second-rate players, but find as many as you need to play a 4-3 because this 3-4 thing is a disaster.
Well, good. And, you know, the comment's been made that, you know, the move to the 3-4 was about the injury to Reggie Hayward. Could you make the argument that the move to a 4-3 would have been called upon with the injury to Rob Meyer? I mean, could you not make the argument that, that this team is suited to a 4-3 personnel right now? I mean, could
let me back you up. Are you saying that this team would be better off playing a 4-3 now than a 3-4?
I don't know.
Because I think it would be.
I think it would be just because it's got a history with it.
Absolutely. Because the linebackers know how to play a 4-3 and are better suited to a 4-3.
I just know this, and that when you face a team that runs a 3-4, a successful 3-4, the key ingredient to that is outside backers that can play. That's number one. And I don't think they have them.
Jeff, and I'm going to use the consummate 3-4 team here as an example, when the Steelers linebackers get a turnover, where does the ball go? To the house. They don't just recover it. They take it to the house.
Well, you could say the same thing about New Orleans defense this year. I mean, other defenses are doing the same thing.
Because 3-4 backers have the speed to take it to the house. They have you know, superior athletes.
I'd be very curious to know, you know, after this year, what are they going to be? Are they going to be 3-4? Are they going to be 4-3?
You got one player who says 3-4.
Terrence Knighton.
That's it.
Let's break. More to come. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
All right, so here's the real question. What do you do with Reggie Nelson? Does he go back to safety? I mean, because he was, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong now, I don't want this to sound stupid, but I thought he was tackling pretty well the first month of the season.
Well, I don't know about the first couple weeks, but I know the last couple weeks of safety he was doing a pretty good job, and the game that I remember of him doing a real good job in tackling was against Steven Jackson and the Rams. Yeah. Can you blame, you know, an effort or a performance like that on the move to corner? Well, I mean, tackling doesn't change whether you play safety or corner.
No, you said it best. Say what you told me. You said it best that the day of the game or after the game, we were coming home. You said that, you know, they said to him, you're going to play corner, and the reaction was, oh, goody, now I don't have to tackle.
I mean, that's what it seemed. That's what it seemed like,
it
is that,
like,
you know, the corners don't have to tackle. But boy, I tell you what, when you play Chris Johnson, everybody's got to tackle.
Betcha.
You know, everybody's got to tackle, and Reggie had a very forgettable day.
And, you know, Jack
four
said,
or five missed tackles.
And Jack Del Rio said something very interesting.
But it wasn't just him, now.
Was it? Wasn't it?
Clint Ingram.
Clint Ingram had a bad game. Brian Russell missed tackles. Gerald Alexander missed tackles. There's probably four guys that I say in that game that I think did pretty well. I think Darryl Smith was pretty solid. I think Justin Durant was pretty solid, given it was his first game back and, what, 3 weeks of inactivity, okay, counting
got,
the bye week.
You got two of them. Go ahead.
Terrence Knighton, I thought, handled
that's
Kevin Mawai. John Henderson, I thought, played pretty well. And the other one that played well against Rome was Derek Harvey.
Well, Jack Del Rio said Henderson, Knighton, Durant, and Smith. He told us on Monday that those four guys had played pretty well.
And I'd add Derek Harvey to that.
What did you see from Harvey?
I mean, against the run, I thought he was good. You know, but they went to the right side on some of the big plays. And when you go to the right side, that's Reggie was left corner. Clint Ingram's the left outside backer. John Henderson is a left end, but, you know, you got to turn it back in to allow the big man to be able to get to it. A lot of those plays were the speed. But, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Chris Johnson, because the guy was fantastic. And for those that happen to watch Jaguars All Access Monday night, if the Titans had lost that ball game, they'd be looking at themselves much like the Jaguars are looking at their performance, because there were terrible efforts by some of their star players, like Keith Bullock and Stephen Tulloch, Cortland Finnegan, to where that team would be saying the same thing if the scoreboard were different.
It was either Monday or today, and I think it was today that Jack Del Rio made this remark. I wish I had my notebook so I could read the exact quote, but he said that they had actually done things schematically to have the ball spit at Reggie Nelson, which means directed at him, which means to put him in position to make tackles.
He was targeted.
No. Jack was saying the Jaguars schematically
funneled everything towards him,
put him in position to direct things at him. They wanted him.
Because he tackled well.
Because he said he had tackled well in recent weeks. What do you think of that?
From a scheme standpoint?
From any standpoint. Wouldn't he have known that I'm being selected here to be the star, that things are being directed at me? I mean,
well, typically you'd feel good about a safety, you know, being put on the edge and playing corner and his ability to tackle.
Safeties are better tacklers than corners.
And Reggie's got the ability. I mean, the guy's got speed. He's quick. He's not a hammerhead, you know, where he's just going to crush people. But, I mean, how many guys are like that in the National Football League? Not a whole lot, but his performance had to be better.
So what do you do with him? Does he go back to safety this week if Rasheen is healthy?
Well, I mean, if Rasheen's healthy, absolutely. Then he's going to go back to his role that he's going to be a safety and a nickel. You know, I think that's what you got to do.
What kind of confidence does a coach have in that guy back out on the field this week? I mean, you're not going to see Larry Johnson, so it's not like you're...
I don't know. You know, I'm going to be real curious to watch what happens on Sunday, because you remember in that game with Reggie playing corner, they were slated to have Gerald Alexander and Sean Considine at safety. And when Considine came down with an illness, flu or whatever it was the day before the game, then that changed things. But now this week, if Considine is back and Reggie had a forgettable game in Tennessee, what will happen? I don't know. We'll see.
I would think that a coach would want to see a lot from Reggie this week.
I've seen enough.
I don't know. I think you're not going to get the answer to that until Sunday rolls around. That's what I've wanted when, and I'm not talking about the inactive, but when that ball is kicked off and you're looking at who's on the field, I'm going to be watching close. I want to see what happens in the secondary if Rasheen plays.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Let's grab Keith from the west side before we break here at the bottom of the hour. Hello, Keith.
Yes, I just have a question for you guys. I'll listen to it off air. Do the Jaguars, do we have the personnel to get the right players in our team as far as for next year, looking for the future?
Well, I don't know what you mean. What do you mean, do they have the personnel?
I mean, the people who do hire our players or scouting and all. I mean, Shaq Harris, I thought, had done a terrible job on getting personnel to our team the last 3-4 years. And, I mean...
I got you. I know what you mean.
He's asking about Gene Smith.
He's asking whether or not the Jaguars personnel department is capable of bringing in the right people. And the answer is absolutely yes, because they've brought in the right people this year.
Derek Cox, Terrence Knighton, Eben Britton, Eugene
Very strong draft. That I think if Eugene Monroe gets on track, which he was out of the starting lineup, and that was a kick in the pants, if Eugene Monroe fulfills his potential, this is a great draft. And if Gene Smith continues to have that type of track record in April every year, this team is headed for great things.
All right, folks, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than the folks at Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today or on Sunday as you make your way from home to the stadium for the Jaguars and the Chiefs. 1 o'clock kickoff, and of course, you'll hear every minute of it right here on News Talk Radio WOKV, starting with our coverage at 10 a.m. and the Tailgate Show. We've got 90 more minutes of this radio program coming up right after this on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio WOKV.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
This portion of Jaguars This Week brought to you by Best Buy. Remember, there's a brand new Best Buy for you to visit this holiday season over the St. John's Town Center. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato, and you. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. And, of course, if you're listening outside of our calling area or via the Internet, 800-355-NFL-1 makes the call free to you. Jack Del Rio put his team through a full patch practice today. You suppose something like that sends a message?
Yeah, but did you have to? If you had to send it, then you really have problems. I mean, coming off 305 yards rushing allowed, you shouldn't have to send a message. But I guess it reinforces it. What do you think, Jeff? You played.
Well, I mean, does it send a message? Yeah, I mean, it sends a message that, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. And I think with a young team, you know, were they not in pads so far every Wednesday pretty much this year?
No, not according to my information, they were not.
Well, I'd like to see them in pads every Wednesday because it's a young team. You know, and young teams need to work. You don't have to bang heads every single play in practice to be able to get better, but I think pads teaches correct technique. Taking them off on Thursday, you know, for the practice, and Friday, obviously, you're not in pads. I'm all for that. But, you know, one of the things that's kind of gotten lost in 305 yards this week has been the play of David. He wasn't very good. That's two games in a row that really he hadn't been all that great.
All right, hold on. I want you to tell us in detail at what he was not very good.
Throwing. Reading. Decisiveness.
Do you have the play-by-play? I mean, can you give us specific examples?
Sure.
I want to know.
There was a point in the third quarter where you're down by 10, and it was the Ernest Wilford double move, and I telestrated that at the Smart Board on All Access Monday night. And Wilford, tight end, gets the matchup of Michael Griffin. Safety goes out to cover him. Mm-hmm. Ernest fakes the slant. Griffin bites. Ernest is, I mean, he's gone.
Missed him.
He saw a flash in front of him, which was David Thornton, a linebacker, and Uche kind of had to reach out and really hold him, mm-hmm. which should have been a penalty. And when David saw the flash, he tucked it and tried to roll out. And, boy, he really stood in there in that St. Louis Rams game where he threw that ball to Mike Thomas.
Mm-hmm. In overtime.
He should have stayed in there and threw it, and he wouldn't have gotten hit. But he should have stayed in there because he pumped and then he tried to run. If he pumped and then reloaded and threw it immediately, 6 points. 6 points. And then there was the conversation about the head coach and Maurice Drew's carries, and David had the ability to check out.
Right.
And they were audibling to some slants because the Titans were bringing eight in the box. There was a couple slants that he had to Torrey Holt that he looked his way and he didn't throw it, and I don't know why. He was open.
The first play of the game, the first two plays of the game were runs that David checked out of because the Titans showed that they were going to load the box. I think the Titans were also baiting. I think they were baiting him into believing they were loading the box and then backing out. But, you know, that's stuff you have to find out. You don't have to.
That's a thing that you study.
Right, that's right.
To learn.
That's right. That's right. But you know, you don't have to score every possession. My point is, they did recover. They should have been ahead 14-13. They laid an egg early, but they got back to 14-13. And let's not forget that the two long runs, the 80 and 79-yard runs, is what got them back to what should have been a 14-13 lead. If those 80 and 79-yard runs were 80 and 79-yard 12-play drives, there's more runs in there, okay? So let's not get all blown away on the rushing attempts, because when you run 80 yards and 79 yards,
it eliminates options.
It eliminates five and six carries along the way. But anyhow.
But what about the coach's comment that they removed?
But well, just let me ask this to both of you. Does it not bother you that after they got back to 13-13, and it should have been 14-13, and it appeared they were in control of the game, that they melted on both sides of the ball? They didn't run very well after that. They threw the ball poorly after that, and they didn't stop anything after that. Doesn't that bother you?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to see something. I mean, really, when it got to that point to where they tied it up, took the lead, missed extra point, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
That's almost like, okay, boy, we didn't start fast. Right. We didn't come out with a lot of energy. But you know what? We're in it.
Yeah.
And you want to see a team get energized.
Didn't you expect them to win at that point?
I thought that this is it.
So did I.
Because, you know, you could see the Titans kind of teetering.
Right.
They were on the edge. Oh, here we go. And he had a quarterback in Vince Young who didn't do all that much.
And he was nibbling a little bit in the next drive, which went for a touchdown.
Well, right.
But it was a 52-yard run.
Well, how about this, though? Third down and six. You remember the play? It was at the Titans' 41-yard line, and he's back in the pocket. And it was one of those occurrences where the Jaguars did have some pressure.
Right.
And they couldn't get him on the ground.
And he got the first down by 1 yard.
But he made an amazing throw to Kenny Britt, who came back
and dove for it.
So that's okay.
Best throw of the game.
Yeah. That's right. That was the play of the game for them. And then, of course, on the next play, since that was a conversion.
Well, he had a scramble in there, too, where he got the first down by a yard.
Right, but that was the third down conversion that gave them the first and 10 at the Tennessee 48, and then the next play was 52.
But you see, falling behind 13-0 and not running the ball enough early, I can overlook that because once you come back to tie at 13-13, the game is on the line, and now everything is forgettable. It's what you do from here on that matters. And everything they did from then on was awful.
Wasn't good.
So,
you know, and during the broadcast of that game, you know, and I brought up David's performance, you know, if you look at the numbers right now, during the broadcast of that game, we talked about the first interception where Torrey Holt gets kind of rubbed by the umpire. If Torrey Holt doesn't hit the umpire, it's still a pick.
See, Jeff, I'm with you on this one.
Rod Hood had jumped it.
I'm with you on this one, and I've had several people say, "Oh no, you're wrong.
Uh-uh.
He had a yard on him. It would have been a gainer."
Nope.
I'm with you on this one. I think
I said it during the game that the umpire cost David a pick.
Rod Hood had inside position, and he was tracking the ball.
He would have picked it either way.
I agree with you.
Let's go back to Jack's comment that they had removed the ability for David to audible out of the runs.
Mm-hmm. What? No, you mean later in the game?
Well, he talked about it on Monday.
Yeah, he said the quote was that they said to him, "Look, just call it and run it.
Right.
Just give him the ball and let's run it."
All right. Was that for Sunday or is that in general?
No. He's got. I talked to David today. He's got the option again. He retains the option to check out of these plays. What they've done is it's not a Peyton Manning kind of thing. It's just they give him two plays. They give him a run, and then he has a pass or two out of which he can check to.
Right.
And he saw them load the box, and he checked to the pass. They were baiting him. And then they were coming out of it. But they overcame that. They were there. First play of the second half. It's 13-13. You're in control of the game, and it looks like Tennessee is going over the cliff again. And then they melted on both sides of the ball. And that's the part that bothers me. I can deal with the fact that they lost the little chess match early in the game. I can deal with the fact that they didn't run the ball enough because they would have run the ball enough if they had gotten a stop on defense after they tied the game. What I can't deal with is that with the game on the line, they let Chris Johnson go 52-89.
Right. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Let's grab Mike from the south side here in this segment. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Before I make my comment and ask my question, I just want to say that I'm not piling on Garrard. I've always been a big supporter of his and think he's a good quarterback. But my question is, I guess, in your guys' opinion, is it too early to say that we made a mistake on him, you know, giving him the money that we did and giving him the starting job?
Well, no. First of all, let me answer that now, and I want Jeff and Brian to chime in too. No, it's not too early. It's not too early. But so you understand, it's not too late either.
Right.
You know, he was given the money that he was given to be this team starting quarterback is – the money that a starting quarterback in the National Football League gets.
Yeah.
All right? And he's done it for 2 years. It's not as though so much money has been invested in him that you're trapped. Oh, no, 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 no. Basically, you've gotten your money's worth here. You know what I mean by that. In other words, you pay, what was the signing bonus? 16? 14?
No, I thought 15? It was 13.
13, okay. Signing bonus was 13? Divide that by two, and that's what a starting quarterback in the National Football League gets. So it's not like it's too soon, but it's not too late either. You're not trapped in this. He was given an opportunity, and you know, there are days when he plays very well, as he did against Tennessee, as he did against St. Louis, except that one pass.
As he did against Houston.
As he did against Houston, there's days he plays really well, and you say, yeah, he is the guy. And then you see the other days, and you say it's too late in his career for there to be other days.
Loggy,
got to be more consistent.
You know, it seems like when he plays well, he gets started from the first snap playing well, right? I mean, mm-hmm. he gets that rhythm early, and then he rides it. But it seems like when things don't go well for him, you never see him turn it on in the third quarter.
Well, when I watch David, I can always tell whether he's going to have a good game by watching his feet. Because his feet can make him either decisive or indecisive, or whatever the word may be. And his feet were drifting Sunday. You know, and I think the true measure of great quarterbacks are feet, because the ability to throw accurate, timely passes means that you have to be set and ready to deliver. And you can tell when David is not. He drifts.
You know, along the lines of what you're saying, because you're absolutely right. Nowadays, the fashionable thing is get the ball out of your hand. You know, he has to get the ball out of his hand quicker. There's something to be said about getting the ball out of your hand later. There's something to be said about the commitment of a quarterback to stand in the pocket until he finds a guy who's open. I mean, it's almost as though there is such a fear of the sack. Hey, it's just 5-6 yards lost. It's the equivalent of an offside penalty. What's the big deal?
Well, that's what Jeff was talking about on that one play to Ernest Wilford. Stand in the pocket. Hold it for another second. Don't move, and then go.
Well,
throw it.
And you know, hey, look, the week before, or 2 weeks before, against St. Louis, man, he had two unblocked guys that come in and just hammered him, and he never flinched.
Put the ball on a dime to my
On the money.
Roethlisberger stands in the pocket forever, and he gets sacked over and over and over.
But his game is out of the pocket. He's a better quarterback when he's out and he's moving. He's great. He's maybe the greatest that the game has had in the last 20 years at moving out of the pocket and creating.
The point is that all those sacks didn't keep him from winning the Super Bowl.
Mm-mm.
It's not as though sacks get points. If the ball, as long as the ball is not stripped and you know, unless it's, as long as the ball is a turnover isn't forced, it's just lost yards. It's the same as a penalty.
Let's break. We'll come back with more of Jaguars This Week right after this. Presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Just X Watchers. You can get yours exclusively at Espling Jewelers. Sexton, Loggeman, Catchman, Fortunato. Okay, what's the countdown? How many minutes until the Phillies?
62-63.
How do you feel?
He's tight.
I'm tight.
He's cautiously optimistic.
We're going down tonight, Joe. Just
it's
just,
over?
Yeah.
Saying it's over, huh?
Yep.
I hope it's a good game, Joe.
What year is the
I'm
shirt?
Rooting for him.
Fairly new.
You should have worn that old ugly one. You won it.
Hey, who they?
No, we lost with that shirt.
Oh, did you?
Is Pedro pitching tonight?
Yes.
That's going to make it interesting. I hope he hits somebody.
Well, he'll probably pitch well. They need to hit for him.
Hey, by the way, I met a movie star on Sunday.
Who?
I was sitting outside the Renaissance Hotel in Nashville smoking my Sunday morning cigar.
You were smoking a what?
Smoking my Sunday morning cigar.
Okay, I was just checking there. You've been acting kind of funny lately.
No, never. one of Jacksonville's own Swisher Sweets.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Best thing about Jacksonville. Anyhow, this little crate, goofy little dog comes walking by on a leash, of course. Ugly dog. I mean, really strange. Little bitty body in this giant head. So I, you know, oh, hey, come here, little guy, you know. And
the dog bit you.
No. He comes over, and I pet him, and I lied. I said, oh, he's really cute. I want to just get up close to see if he was really as ugly as he looked. He was. I mean, just unbelievably ugly. And I said, it was a woman walking the dog, and I said, what kind of dog is that? And she said, that's a French bulldog, which is kind of a, isn't that kind of a malaprop? I mean,
I just never knew that a bulldog would exist in France.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, they don't have any. They're not tough. Anyhow, we talked a little bit, and she said, thank you, and she walked away. And I didn't really get a look at her because I was looking at the dog. I was amazed at how ugly it was. And she walked away, and a doorman came up to me, and he said, hey, do you know who that is? I said, no. He said, that's Laura Ingalls from Little House on the Prairie, Melissa Gilbert. So I have that going for me, which is nice.
I was a big fan of Little House on the Prairie.
I was just about to say, is she still as cute as she was?
She had real dark hair. But now that I think of the voice, you know, yeah, the voice was familiar. I didn't get a good look at her. I was looking at
the dog. Want to know how the bulldog ended up in France?
Theories abound.
Go ahead. But the prevalent opinion is that the mid-1800s Normandy lace workers from England took smaller bulldogs with them when they sought work in France. The breed was not common,
no,
and it had a chance to develop in France.
Well, and so in other words, the English bulldogs threw them out.
There you go. They were too small.
They were too small, too scrawny, couldn't fight. They said, go to France.
The one that I'm looking at here is not quite as ugly as you might have suggested.
And this one was really ugly. I hope she isn't listening. Ah, she wouldn't listen.
She lives there in
Nashville. Well, I found out there's a Little House on the Prairie theater troupe going around the country, and that must have been it.
Hmm.
You know where they shot that, don't you?
No.
Coffeyville, Kansas.
Okay. Yeah.
Reggie Nelson played college football.
Now, just to kind of touch on the Reggie thing here, Reggie Nelson would be so much better in a defense that was able to generate pressure.
That's a really, really tall order.
Seriously, mm-hmm. Reggie has two things that I think make him what he was at Florida and I think still make him a really good athlete. He has great ball skills.
He does.
And he has speed.
Mm-hmm, does.
And if he were in a system that were a pressure defense and he could play that center field role, I think Reggie would do well.
Now, the question for the next hour
is... Well, they'll have to leave. He'll have to find another team.
Because right now, this defense now is on pace maybe to break an NFL record low in sacks.
Five sacks, two in the last four games.
That's great.
They've got to find a way to generate pressure.
What's the record?
After stopping.
I'll look it up. I don't know off the top of my head.
Get the record in fact.
I will, but we're due for news here at the top of the hour. So as we go to break for news, this reminder, we've got 60 more minutes of this fine radio program, and we'll take your calls on the other side of news here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome back. Hour number two now of Jaguars This Week. Sexton, Loggeman, Fortunato, Ketchman's wandering the hallway somewhere. We'll grab him whenever we find him. Until then, we'll take your calls, your questions, your comments, 355-NFL-1. We were talking about the pressure before the break, the lack of it for the Jaguars. The NFL record for fewest sacks in a season was set by the Baltimore Colts back in 1982 when they mustered just 11 sacks in a season. So that's the record.
Well,
Rick, 11 sacks, 1982, the Baltimore
Jaguars
Colts.
Jaguars on pace right now about 11.4 So, you know, they got to do something.
The 81 Buffalo Bills had 12. That's the second fewest.
82 Colts. Well, I know I covered a game that year. You know, it's the crazy part is that that was shortly after they had a team with a ton of sacks. It was Fred Cook, John Dutton. They had they had guys who were sacking left and right, and then all of a sudden they went dead in the sack department. That surprises me. I would have never guessed.
Right. Well, the great teams that some, you know, you talk about the Eagles and the Raider teams of yesteryear. You know, if you're ripping, you're in the 50s, you know,
72 is the record. Chicago Bears, that great Bears team, did it.
But 50, I mean, if you're really good if you're over 50.
Mm-hmm.
If you're over 40, you're doing pretty good. If you're floating around 5 and soon to be halfway point, you're not doing so good.
I covered two great pass rush teams. The Steel Curtain one in the 70s and then the Blitzburg bunch in the 90s. And, I mean, they were just – it was just 3-4 a game.
Yeah, I watched the Blitzburg defense rip our guys.
I'm telling you why.
They were good.
Oh, they were really good.
They were good.
I'm just looking at the sack totals here over the last couple of years. 07.
The 99 bunch was the...
Yeah. I'm just looking at the last couple of years. You know, the 07 team had 37. The 06 team had 35. In 2005, they had 47,
mm-hmm.
which is, I believe, the most in the Del Rio era. 37 in 04, and obviously they only had 24.
I mean, it's been declining.
Yeah.
And for obvious reasons that the defensive line declined. Marcus Stroud hurt his ankle, and he was never the same. And, you know, John's been a little bit of a downward trend here in recent years. And Harvey's not the player he was drafted to be. And Groves, I don't know what to say. I don't know what he is. I don't know if he's an end, a linebacker, a pass rush specialist.
Special teams player. Right,
yeah. I mean, I don't know what he is. They signed Reggie Hayward, and he had a real good year the year they signed him, and then came the Achilles, and he hasn't been the same. This team has not had a lot of luck with defensive linemen in recent years until Terrence Knighton this year, who looks like he's a long-term guy if he stays healthy.
The 99 team had 57 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know the second most in Jaguars history?
No.
97. You guys. 48.
Yeah. Yeah, we were decent. You know,
that's pretty good.
Clyde could
get after it.
Clyde was one of the smoothest pass rushers I've ever watched.
He had 8.5. Brack had 7. Joel had 6.5. You had 5. Donnie Davey, Kelvin Pritchett, Kevin Hardy, Ronaldo Wynn all had 3. So you mm-hmm. had a bunch of guys getting there.
We played a lot of guys that year.
Yeah,
played a lot of guys, and pretty effectively, I might add.
355 NFL 1. Let's go to Roy over in the West Side. Keep the talk going about the pass rush. Hello, Roy.
How y'all doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, y'all hit on my topic pretty good there. I was calling basically to figure out why the Jaguars really never have been a pressure defense. I mean, they've had a couple good years here and there and stuff, a couple good players in the past, but, I mean, they don't run a lot of stunts, and it does seem like they never blitz the quarterbacks hardly at all, especially on obvious downs. And I know that Jeff quoted a fact Sunday in the pregame about 20 of the 22 starters from last year or back this year. If that's true, how can we be doing so badly?
No, that was 20 of 22 starters. I was talking about the Tennessee Titans. And that was kind of in my response to Vic as far as I was saying that Tennessee can still play. And they're not as bad as you think. They blitz. They bring it. But for whatever reason, it's not effective. And when you blitz, what you're looking for is either what we call free runners or one-on-one matchups. And free runner obviously means the guy's unblocked and hopefully he hits the quarterback. And when you get one-on-one matchups, you expect to win those. And right now they don't have the people that are winning one-on-one matchups. The other thing that I think is that with the lack of stopping the run this past weekend, you know, it's very difficult to rush the passer when the down and distance doesn't allow you to get after the quarterback. But I would like to see this team get to third and 5+ and start to put hands down. When I say hands down, I'm talking track stance, here we come, block us. Not looking in a 3-4 front saying, well, we might bring this guy or we might bring that guy. The teams that have always been the best at rushing the passer, you knew who was coming mm-hmm. and you couldn't stop mm-hmm. it. And I think that this team needs to get back to a little bit of that on third down.
And that means drafting.
Well, it means drafting. It also means playing some of the guys you got with their hand out.
I'm seeing, by the way, some really good-looking defensive linemen who will be available in next year's draft. And it's not just the kid Sue from Nebraska.
And Ndamukong Suh, he is a real good
player. Fabulous player. There's a guy at Penn State named Jared Audrick who is outstanding. I saw a guy at your school, Virginia. I forget his name. His number is 98. Inside defensive lineman, a powerful-looking guy. There's the guy at North Carolina. Please forgive me. His number is 8, I believe. If you can believe, number 8 for a defensive lineman. Forget his name. Very, very good. You know, a dominant physical specimen. There are a lot of good-looking defensive linemen going to be in next year's draft.
Like you just said to my question, draft, put them on the ground with guys you got.
Yeah.
Who would you do that with on Sunday? Would you put Groves
out
there?
That's sometimes. You know, I think Groves could have been utilized maybe in Tennessee just because he's got speed. And if Vince Young escapes the pocket, he's got the ability to run him down. When I get pass rushers on the field, I'd like to see the guys that do have some speed and do have some pass rush ability. I think Derek Harvey needs to put his hand down. I think Atiyah Ellison in the middle somewhat, a Derek Landry, a Darryl Smith at times on the outside. And the problem this past week, though, was just with the down and distance, it wasn't favorable. But the more speed you have on the field, and they better find a way to get some speed on the field this week, because Matt Cassel will run it, and he's an effective runner. He's not particularly accurate, and a lot of times when he gets back in the pocket, if it's not there, he's going to tuck it and run it. So you got to have guys that have speed to be able to catch them. This week you're going to need it, much like you needed it last week against the Tennessee Titans and Vince Young.
Well, I'll give you my bent on this Sunday's game, if you don't mind.
No, please.
Kansas City's awful. I mean, this is – I had a certain somebody say to me, this is the worst team in the league talent-wise. They're really, really depleted. And they got no Larry Johnson. This is an opportunity for the Jaguars to be 4-4 at the midway point in the season. That's not bad, all things considered. But if the Jaguars don't win this game, ouch. I mean, this could be the beginning of the end for a lot of things, a lot of people. I mean, you know, here's my challenge to David Garrard. Stop having bad games. Now we've seen him in the good games, and they're good enough.
Oh yeah, when he has a good game, he's very good.
He's very good. No more bad games. That's my challenge to him, and there are other people who are going to be challenged too.
Loggy, I said to you earlier after going over, you know, looking at the chart, looking at the numbers, saying, okay, so how bad are these guys? And your response was, not that bad.
Well, they're not that bad just because they play hard. You know, and I give Todd Haley some credit in that they, you know, hey, look, when you've only won one game against the Washington Redskins, you know, it's kind of easy for efforts to lack. And, you know, this team does play hard. But Vic is right in that offensively they have a severe lack of talent along the offensive line somewhat, but in more particular the skill positions. Because Larry Johnson, even when he's out there, hey, look, Larry Johnson's not a great back.
Shadow of his form.
He's averaging 2.7 per carry this year.
He's a guy.
Yeah.
The wide receivers that they have, I mean, they picked up Chris Chambers off of the waiver wire from the San Diego Chargers this week. That ought to tell you what they think about their wideouts. Wideouts aren't that good. They don't have Tony Gonzalez anymore. So they need skill players. Dwayne Bowe's their best talent, but he's inconsistent.
You want to know what not to do if you're having a bad year. Here's what you don't do. You don't give somebody a second round pick for Chris Chambers. You don't give somebody a second round pick for Chris Chambers and then cut him a year or two later. A year later? Yeah. Last year. Didn't the Chargers give the Dolphins a second round pick?
2 years ago.
2 years ago? Yeah. The same thing with Deion Branch. There's another, you know, he was a first round pick.
They gave up a first and a third, didn't they?
First and a third. I mean, and now he's nothing. So
the one thing that I will, and I've been wanting to tell you this, what was your opinion on Tyson Jackson draft day.
Then he was overdrafted.
How overdrafted do you think he was?
My understanding was that he was a middle of the first round guy.
He ain't even that.
Really?
No, he's terrible.
I was told he was a
third pick in the
draft.
He's
terrible.
He got $30 million guaranteed.
He's terrible.
No, I know. It's, hey, and this is a couple years after they drafted Glenn Dorsey instead of Matt Ryan. No, Ryan was gone. I'm sorry. Ryan was gone.
Right.
They drafted Dorsey, who's a complete bust. Tyson Jackson is a bust. They have made some monumental goofs. Did they screw up on Castle? Ton of money.
Probably so. But I will say this, though. From watching Tyson Jackson, I remember your comments on draft day. And I remember watching a highlight tape on Tyson Jackson, and I remember going, that's a highlight tape?
Right.
But I don't watch enough of college football to be able to make a fair opinion on people. And so I went this week, you know, like I usually do, watched a lot of tape of the upcoming opponent and watched Kansas City play in two different games and watched one win and I watched a loss. To kind of, you know, that way sometimes you can see the better of a team. And Tyson Jackson did not look good in either one. Well, Glenn Dorsey is clearly miscast. You know,
yes.
Kansas City's playing a 3-4. He's not a 3-4 player.
Right.
He needs to play in that old Tampa Bay style, get up the field type of defense.
I'll tell you where I got my information on Tyson Jackson. Rick Reapers, who used to be with the Jaguars personnel guy, is now the college scouting director for the Saints. I asked him about Tyson Jackson. He said, do you think there's anybody in the league who has watched more Tyson Jackson? This is almost an exact quote. Has watched more Tyson Jackson tape than I have. He said, I promise you, there is none. Nobody has seen more Tyson Jackson tape than I have. He said, now, please, show me where he makes a play. Find me one tape where he makes a play.
Wasn't Scott Pioli the executive of the decade?
Yes, he was.
Personnel executive
for
of the
building
decade?
That team.
You know how we knew he wasn't any good? Cleveland wanted him.
And with that, we'll take a break. You're listening to Jaguars This Week.
That's not fair.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back. Let's go to the phone lines here as we near the bottom of the hour. Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. And we've got John over in Keystone Heights. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Hey, Vic, on Monday night, a good show, and you came up with a good thing about the unwanted.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was thinking is how many of the unwanted did we replace this year? And, you know, because of the draft and how good we did in the draft, you know, people need to look at maybe the possibilities of replacing more of the unwanted next year.
Yeah, well, you know, what Gene Smith did was he knew who the guys were. He didn't want the guys who were had character issues, concerns, guys who didn't give their best. He wanted to make sure that the Matt Jones of the world were off this roster, and a whole lot more. You know, he wasn't comfortable with a guy like Tony McDaniel and what was in his past. You know, Tony McDaniel is playing for the Dolphins, and he's a big, athletic guy. But, you know, that is not a guy that Gene Smith is going to bring onto this roster. He had a terrible, terrible event in his past. And
he sucker-punched the kid at the University of Tennessee.
The guy almost died.
Yep.
He lay on the floor for 2.5 minutes while all the thugs ran circles around him with their hand in the air, celebrating this guy's near death. And, you know, all of a sudden now, this is all going to go away because this person has seen the light. And, you know, I'm all for second chances, but what if he doesn't see the light? You know, why not just find somebody else? And that's the attitude Gene Smith took. This roster, this is a roster of good young men. Have we had any problems this year? When's the last time there's been an arrest? When's the last time there's been a problem?
Just the Groves traffic thing.
Yeah.
All right, he had an accident.
And the Mike Walker thing in the hotel in Seattle, that's it. That wasn't an arrest, but
yeah,
it was...
you know, and... Okay. Those aren't guys he drafted either.
No. Yeah. I'm not blaming it on Gene. I'm just saying those are the only two incidents I can think of.
It's been pretty clean.
Yeah.
It's been pretty clean, and it's going to get cleaner. So when you all of a sudden start throwing out first-round picks, they let Reggie Williams go, they cut Matt Jones, when you all of a sudden just start, you know, gutting your roster, you don't have enough draft picks to make up for that. You've got to go find some unwanteds.
Has Reggie Williams or Matt Jones
no.
signed?
They're no.
still on the street.
Same with Jerry Porter. Your top three receivers from last year are not playing football.
Whew.
And you gave Porter, Florence, and Cleo Lemon $25 million. You've got no problem with Cleo Lemon because he was
not a bad guy.
Good guy. Good guy, just not very good player. But Florence is back up in Buffalo,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Hey, the thing about Matt Jones and Reggie Williams is they're players who should be coming into their prime, too.
Oh, absolutely.
We're not talking about
one should be key contributors right now.
One player left from the 05 draft. And the 05 draft now is in its fourth season, right? 6, 7, 8, 9. This is its fourth season in the league.
Be fifth.
Because
the 05
okay,
is counted.
Five, that's your prime. That mm-hmm. is the prime, the absolute peak prime of a football player's, professional football player's career.
Who's that that's left?
Scott Starks.
Yeah.
Do you suppose that Matt Jones will reemerge? I'm not even going to ask you about Reggie Williams. That a year out of football, working to rehabilitate himself, if the stories that we've read are correct, that he'll get a shot somewhere in 2010?
Probably.
I mean, you'd think so, because there's been
probably
a lot of guys that have gotten other chances. He has not. I mean, he worked out where?
What am I supposed to like? The speed?
I don't know. I'm just asking whether you think someone will bring him in.
I mean, somebody will bring him in, you know, because it doesn't cost anything to bring him in and have him go through a camp, you know. But, you know, when you're talking about Matt Jones, I mean, that whole work ethic knock that he had coming out of Arkansas, and while he, I guess, it gained momentum because it was legitimate when he was here.
Yeah.
Hey, look, you know, life is short when you're a personnel guy in the National Football League. Why are you going to expose your team to somebody that may have those attributes?
You're not.
And Reggie Williams.
Now, that's self-explanatory.
Off the field, arrest records, you know.
His situation in Houston this year is off the charts.
The guy was 1 hour into free agency when he...
And could have caught on.
Yeah.
Without
oh, yeah.
that incident.
He was 1 hour into free agency when he had to be tasered. When he had to be tasered in a Houston nightclub.
Yeah. Oof. That's why I don't even ask about him. That, I knew. The Jones thing, I was just curious. Because there have been stories about him working over in Bradenton, working to rehabilitate. You know, his agent's been out there in front. Got nothing this year. Where did he work out? Tennessee once?
Yeah, from what I understand, maybe twice.
Maybe Tampa also, and that's it.
It is what it is.
Yep.
I mean, this is it's not a right to be able to play in the National Football League, and the way the league is now with the new commissioner, you don't make those kind of mistakes anymore. And unfortunately, Matt made mistakes that were kind of compounded onto his reputation from before. So
the bottom line,
but that
is,
hurts.
They exacerbated his.
Well,
reputation.
I mean, it hurts, and that, you know, you're right, Vic, about one player left from the 05 draft. I mean, these are the guys that you want to be premium players.
These
now.
These are the nucleus players.
I mean, yeah, that is the heart of your team, or should be the heart of your team at this point. And hey, look, they're all not going to make it. You're going to miss. You know, that's the way the draft is, but. To have those high picks like that, not even to be contributors at this point, that hurts a team, and it's hurt this team.
This offseason can't, as far as I'm concerned, come soon enough. The sooner they get to the offseason, the sooner we get to the point that Gene Smith can start fixing the roster again.
You get back to the point of addition.
Right.
And that's really what this team needs.
All right, Jaguars fans, you can enter to win $50,000 towards a new home with Prudential Network Realty's Take It to the House drawing. One winner is chosen for each home game. That person and a guest win tickets, a parking pass, could win $50,000. Log on to PrudentialNetworkRealty.com for details. News is next here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back. Jaguars This Week has 24 more minutes in it. You can take part in all of them, either listening or calling at 355-NFL1. And Jaguars fans, you can vote for your favorite teacher to be the Community First Credit Union Teacher of the Week. That means your teacher is sitting in the club seats for a Jaguars game, all part of First Down Touchdown Teachers. Of course, you'll find the details at communityfirstfl.org. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato, counting down the minutes to Game 6 of the World Series.
Do you know what? You know what a pivot point is?
I do.
This Sunday's game is kind of a pivot point. As I said earlier, 4-4 ain't bad.
Not for a team with as many young players as you're playing.
Yeah, but you know, this is the equivalent, as you said earlier in the show, of that Cincinnati, that Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit stretch
from last year,
which was the pivot point on which that team teetered and then collapsed.
Right. But that team didn't have any excuse.
Well, I think we're at the same point. I think this stretch they were in here, which was Seattle, St. Louis, Tennessee, and Kansas City, I think that's your pivot point. Four pretty soft games. And you're 1-2. And if you don't get back to 2-2 in those games, you could lose this season, just as you could see this season go the same way as last year's season went when it hit that pivot point of Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Detroit, and that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Cleveland, Cincinnati.
Well, but then Minnesota came in, and we know what that was, and then the Monday night game at Houston, which was
but they had that Cleveland, Cincinnati thing.
That was it.
And they lost those two games, and that was the pivot point that this team, that caused this team to go down. And I think we're there.
But clearly this is a different team.
It's a different team, but I mean, Kansas City is really bad. If you lose this game, you're going to have trouble holding this thing together. Jeff, do you agree?
Yeah.
I think you'll have trouble holding it together if they don't win this game. If you win this game, you can hold this together. The Jets certainly aren't unbeatable. Buffalo should be a win. You can hold this together.
You're losing me, though, on the hold it together verbiage. What are you holding it together for?
You can't lose. You can't keep losing to bad teams and keep that morale up. Okay, we'll do it next week.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand what you're holding in, what you're holding together.
I'm using last year as an example. They were 3-3 with Cleveland and Cincinnati dead ahead, and the expectation was they would be 5-3.
Yeah, and the expectation last year was they would then be able to mount some sort of a run to the postseason.
All right. This team was 3-3 with Tennessee and Kansas City. Same thing. One win between the two, dead ahead. And they're 3-4, and they don't dare go to 3-5 because 3-5 was the pivot point that sent last year's team down in a downward spiral, and I'm afraid a loss this Sunday would do the same thing.
Let's grab Cheryl, who joins us now from Palm Coast. Cheryl, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good.
Good. What's
Thanks
on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call.
Surely.
I was just wondering, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit. I was wondering why when we play teams where you think it's a sure win, we end up either having a really close game or we lose. And teams like the Colts, when you have nail-biting the whole time thinking, are we going to come out strong? Are we going to have complete passes? We end up hanging in there and doing very well. So what causes that? Do you think it's the quarterback morale, coach's morale? I mean, you could tell when they step out on the field whether it's going to be a good game or a bad game.
Well, I'll give you my answer. I'll give you my answer, then I'll let Jeff give you his. First of all, that Colts game was the first game of the year, and I don't think the Colts
didn't hit their stride.
That's right. If you're playing them now, if you were going back up to Indianapolis this week to play them, I don't think you could count on 14-12.
No. And then also I think that really as a team right now, people say, well, playing up to the level of competition, down to the level of competition, hey, look, this is not a great team here that we're talking about in Jacksonville yet.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I don't know. Are other teams looking at the Jaguars?
Who are they playing up to? I mean, give me the example. Indianapolis?
They haven't.
That was first game of the year.
I mean, they haven't really played.
Did they play up to Arizona's level?
No.
No.
All right. Well, how about this one? Did they play up to Houston? They're 5-3 now. They've won a couple of road games.
Yeah, but they weren't.
Yeah.
It's the only one. It's the only possibility.
Know, yes, because I mean, Houston's obviously the team, the Chase second best team that's been on the schedule so far. But at that point, did you really think that Houston had found their stride yet?
Well, no.
They hadn't.
But Matt Schaub has been hot. And
he's hot
bad
now.
That day.
But at this point now, he's not hot. So I'm with you, Vic, here. And that, you know,
if they went to Indianapolis this week, it would be brutal.
Indianapolis is good, and this team against teams that throw the ball well is going to struggle.
Right.
I mean, and that's what the numbers tell you.
You see, this team, Cheryl, has some games coming up in December, back-to-back games against Indianapolis and New England that could be really, really ugly, as that game was last year in Houston late in the season. Remember the Monday night game?
Yeah, no, I remember.
And I'm real concerned here because you've got to hold this thing together. You've got to hold it together because we haven't even hit the second half. We haven't even hit the midway point in the season yet.
With a young team.
I'm not trying to be argumentative here, but Schaub threw 3 touchdowns, completed 74% of his passes, and had 116.4 passer rating that day. Mm-hmm. So that would be the only one they played up to.
How many takeaways did the Jaguars have defense, though? That saved their bacon that
day. Your most that's your highest quality win this year.
Right, that's the point I'm making. That was
that
one where they
saved
played
their
up.
Bacon. They had takeaways in that game.
Houston.
And fumble in the end zone.
Yeah, they had an interception that they turned into a field goal, the Jaguars did, and the fumble at the end of the game.
Saved their bacon.
So they were plus one on the day. No, I'm not disputing it. I just was pointing out that would be the one example of them playing up because Schaub was as good as he's been.
I'm expecting a win this week.
I
am really expecting a win this week.
Well, when you look at the numbers, I mean, you know, when you look at what they're doing, Kansas City is throwing for 150 yards. Their quarterback's been sacked 27 times. They're converting 21% on third down. 47 penalties is near the tops in the NFL. Their top rusher is Jamal Charles. Their leading receiver is Dwayne Bowe, who Jeff said was inconsistent. Big guy, Bobby Wade. Their tight end, Sean Ryan. I mean, their offensive line. Brandon Albert, the kid from Virginia, is not playing. He's injured.
Oh, man.
So you got Wade Smith.
He may play this week, though. He's had four weeks to heal.
Okay.
So he may be back in the lineup this week. But does that make them better? A little, but not enough.
Okay, you beat Kansas City, and somehow you managed to be 5-5 after the Buffalo game, right?
Okay.
All right, so now you're 10 games in the season, you're still 500. So you're holding it together. But, man, if you lost this week, the roof could fall in.
The one thing that I will add about Kansas City that we haven't mentioned yet, they're coming off a bye. Okay, Jaguars had the bye going to Tennessee. Tennessee had the same thing. This week and next week, Kansas City, the Jets, both teams get bye prior to the Jaguars game. So that's an advantage. Coaches get the extra week to get guys back, extra week to prepare, extra week to get rested. Be interesting to see how Kansas City plays with a week off.
All right, folks, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 7 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, once you go, you get it. We've got one more segment to bribe you here on Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back, Jaguars This Week. To wrap up here over the next 10 minutes on News Talk Radio WOKV, Jaguars and Chiefs, 1 o'clock kickoff from the stadium here in Jacksonville. We start things at 10 a.m. with the tailgate show, followed by the pregame show at noon. Whistle-to-whistle coverage of the Jaguars and Chiefs and the Winn-Dixie postgame show and the scoreboard show. with Marco Coleman and Sam Jordan. So don't miss a moment of it Sunday afternoon. Weather is supposed to be very, very nice. Shouldn't be an issue. So, 10 minutes left in the show.
Okay.
You've been talking about pivot points here. I just want to get back to the idea that the pivot point is different for this team than it was for last year.
Well, yes, you are right. Another point you're trying to make is that last year's team had a ticking clock. Last year's team had a clock that had an alarm set on it, and the alarm was the postseason. And it, you know, in other words, that's a way of saying that the goal, the expectation was much different.
Okay.
Whereas if this team never wins again this year,
Well, you're not getting better, which is the
goal. Not much is lost, except I'm thinking about some other things. The more you lose, the worse it gets, the greater the change is going to be. And I don't think I have to be specific about it. You got a quarterback here who needs to hold on to his job. I think the coach is in the same situation. It's real simple. Winning is good. Losing is bad. I don't think I'm being unkind or cruel or cold about this.
It's the way it is.
It's just the way it is, and everyone understands it. You know, if you lose control of the season and it's just L, the people get angrier and angrier. And this isn't Green Bay or Pittsburgh or Washington where the tickets are all sold for next year. There's a big ticket issue here. Winning is especially important in Jacksonville because winning sells tickets. And we desperately, desperately need to sell tickets in this town. This is our team. This is where we live. This is where we've lived for 15 years. This is our home now. And I don't think I have to say much more about that either. I think we all get it. I think it's understood what I'm saying.
Well, you just put a little bit more weight on it on Sunday.
All of our you-know-whats are in the ringer here.
To say the least.
We all got something in the fire.
355-NFL-1. 355-6351. Anyone in particular besides Reggie Nelson that you're going to look carefully at on Sunday?
As far as lineups go, left tackle.
Okay. What's it going to take for Eugene Monroe? I know where you're going to say. I don't even have to ask the question. He's got to finish better.
I mean, it's finish. We don't get to see them practice anymore, so we don't know what's going on there. But if Eugene were practicing well, I think he would have played.
Eugene needs more pep.
He needs more fire.
Mm-hmm, fire.
Which is finish. Mm-hmm. That's what I say about finish. Mm-hmm. He needs to have a little bit of that attitude.
Right.
And in his performances of late, he hadn't had it. And he's clearly talented. I mean, there's no doubt that he's talented. And it'll be interesting to see, because I expect him to play this week. I expected him to play last week, and then when he didn't play, I was like, this is a kick in the pants. Mm-hmm. This is a challenge. So what happens after the challenge? You want to see the response. And so I think the coaches this week in practice want to see how he responded, and they're going to want to see how he plays in the game.
Joe Green used to have a saying for this. He used to say, you can't play as though you're above this. Sometimes Eugene gives you a little feeling that he's above this.
My Virginia brother needs to pick it up.
He's not above this.
Because I like to see my Virginia guys do well.
He's a really, really talented guy. He needs to be a little less cool and develop a little more sense of urgency.
He has an extra push this week, you could say, to play and play well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy that was drafted the year before, Brandon Albert, is with the Kansas City Chiefs and more than likely will play this week. Do you have the injury report?
He practiced today.
He practiced. So you're expecting him to play. Mm-hmm. And so I would expect that Eugene will play this week and hopefully will show the type of fire and finish that the Jaguars expect.
Does he get Tyson Jackson or Tom Bahali?
He gets Tom Bahali.
He gets Tom Bahali, who's a premium player.
Ooh.
And Tom Bahali.
And he's a high-energy guy.
High-energy guy, 3 sacks so far on the year. He's really more of a defensive end. But on a bad team, he clearly stands out as a good player. Mm-hmm. So Eugene's not going to get a guy like Kyle VandenBosch, who's really struggling, you know, who was a good player or has been a good player and is struggling. Tom Bahaly is a good player, and he's not struggling, and he's playing well.
Mm-hmm. How many carries is Maurice going to get this week? How many touches?
25.
A bunch.
He had 38 touches in that ball game against the Rams. That's the most in the NFL.
I don't think it's not going to get that high because you don't have the bye week.
You're
right
not
after.
Guaranteed overtime.
He's going to get a lot. He's going to get a lot.
Did you hear Maurice utter any kind of a complaint about his carries, lack of carries on Sunday?
No.
Oh, no. Who's going to carry? Who's going to complain about 177 yards and 22.1 yards per carry? Hey, no. My workload was just fine.
Highest single-game average with at least 8 carries since the merger.
Hey, that's the kind of stuff on which Pro Bowl resumes are built.
You realize what this has done for him now. He is within 51 yards of the franchise mark for most yards through 8 games.
Mm.
So if he has 51 yards, he will have more yards after 8 games than Fred or James Stewart or any other running back.
I didn't hear one complaint. Very unselfish.
He is a great player.
He is. Those were two great runs, man.
Where do you rank him? I mean, in terms of think of all of Fred against the Dolphins Monday Night Football here in 1998. Fred that same year against the Buccaneers.
The two best running backs I ever covered were Franco Harris and Fred Taylor. Number three would be Barry Foster, and Maurice Jones-Drew is passing him in terms of talent and in production.
Yeah.
Foster led the league.
Well, Foster was a fantastic
player. He wasn't a long-term player, but for a while,
he
was a great player.
He didn't like football, so he found a way to get out real quick, get his money, and get out. Maurice Jones-Drew loves football. Maurice is passing Barry Foster very
quickly.
All right,
so there's two runs. I mean, where he was stiff-arming, breaking tackles, weaving through a defense that was chasing him. Where do they rank in the best?
They're Fred-esque.
Yeah. That was what I was telling people this week.
Yeah.
But different.
But different because...
Very different.
Here, you know, the thing that about him that really it continues to surprise me is I keep waiting when he breaks into the open field for him to get caught, but he doesn't. You look at a little guy like that who's dragging a pretty big anchor and you say, okay, he's going to get run down, but he never does.
Well, he didn't get run down this past week because he got some help. He got some good blocking down the field. Without that blocking, he does not score.
That quarterback was way down the field, mm-hmm. too.
Maurice was a little gassed in both of them runs. Mm-hmm. And Maurice has great speed.
He really does.
But he will run out of gas once he gets to 40, 50 yards down the field, as he was doing on those two plays.
Well, I'll tell you, I looked down today in the locker room. Man, he looks heavy. I mean, he looks like he's put on weight.
No, he hadn't.
He is really thick.
He hadn't.
And he's 210 pounds.
He's 208, 210.
Powerful guy. Just a powerful guy.
Extremely powerful. It reminds me of Joe Morris build-wise.
Yeah, but he's way better than Joe
Morris. But way more power than Joe Morris ever possessed.
Well, I mean, how many guys could break?
Maurice has Emmitt Smith strength.
Just about to ask you that.
Yeah, he's got Emmitt Smith strength. Emmitt was the strongest back that I ever tried.
How many guys could break through Kyle VandenBosch hanging on him like he did?
Emmitt could. I mean, Emmitt did it all the time.
Yeah.
There was a guy years ago. Look him up. Please. His name was Dick Bass. He played for the L.A. Rams way back, and he was built like Maurice. I'll bet you if I look him up.
Computer's not on him.
He's going to be a 5'8", 205-pound, 10-pound guy. If there was a guy that I would compare to Maurice, it would be Dick Bass, L.A. Rams.
I'll look it up. All right. Well, that'll about do it for our show this evening, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget Sunday, Jaguars and Chiefs right here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Kick things off at 10 a.m. with the tailgate show, followed by the pregame show, and then the broadcast of the Chiefs and Jags, and, of course, the Winn-Dixie postgame show. Have a great night, everybody.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station for Jaguars football, AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.